right, Albert. And also, there would have been experimental evidence available at this time through astronomical observations. Okay, so it turns out that, I don't want to get into this, but it turns out that there's very, very simple observations that you can make of binary star systems. So most, the majority of stars in the galaxy are actually binary pairs, so two stars orbiting around each other. So there's plenty of examples of this. And if you look with a telescope, you will and you study the motion of these guys, you will also conclude that that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. The source in that case being either star. So at one time the star is moving toward you, at another time it's moving away from you, and so on. So simple observations, which I don't want to get into, give you strong experimental evidence that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. Okay, so everyone would have believed this. Everyone would have said, yep, totally obvious. I want you to compare this statement that I wrote down here with a seemingly, with a closely related statement, but totally different statement. And that is, and let's call it P2 prime. Okay, so this is what Einstein did not say. Okay, if we were to take this statement and we were to replace the word observer here with source, and replace the word source with observer, so just interchange those two words. Okay, so it's exactly the same statement. For a source at rest, the speed of light is c, independent of the motion of the observer. Okay. So that seems like a simple switch around, right? No big deal. But if we think about it for a minute, it is a big deal. This is a totally bizarre statement. Okay, so for a source at rest, the speed of light is c independent of the motion of the observer. So that's like saying, suppose I have a flashlight here, that, which is at rest. It's a source of light, which is shining a beam this way. And that it would be telling me that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the observer. Okay, so suppose we've got this beam of light coming toward me, and I'm at rest with respect to that source, to that flashlight. So how do I measure the speed of light? Well, what I do is I take a meter stick like this. I time how long it takes a light wave front to cross from one end of the stick to the other end. I time how long it takes, and I divide, and I get the speed of light. Okay? And I would find, you know, 3 × 10⁸ or whatever. Now, this is saying that I would get the same value for the speed of light even if I were running toward that light, which is completely bizarre. I mean, if light is a wave in ether, okay, it's moving at some speed, c, with respect to that still ether. If I now start moving with respect to that ether, moving toward that light with a speed v, what speed should I measure for the speed of light? C plus v. If I'm running away from the flashlight, what speed am I going to measure? C minus v, right? So what if light instead is particles? Suppose we have particles coming out of this flashlight with some speed c, drifting through empty space. Okay, so if I'm at rest with respect to the flashlight, I see them whipping by me with a speed c. If I'm running toward those particles with a speed v, I'm going to measure, if I'm running away. Okay, so it's totally bizarre, right? So this statement makes no sense. This statement is completely unbelievable. Okay, so just wanted to point that out. Okay, so this is totally bizarre. P2 prime, totally bizarre. Okay, so at the end of the day, what we're gonna show is that P2 prime actually follows from this and the relativity principle, and the goal of special relativity was to try to understand, because this is in fact true, okay, but it's not at all obvious how it could possibly be true, and the goal of special relativity is to understand why this is true, okay, so that's what we're gonna get to. All right, so in order to get there, we need Einstein's second principle, which is the more important principle, which is the relativity principle. Okay, so let's start over here. So So we'll call this principle number one. This is the more important of the two principles, and that's called the relativity principle. Okay, so I'll just write out a paraphrase. Well, actually, I'll read it and then we'll paraphrase it and then we'll talk about it. Okay, so principle of relativity, according to Einstein, is the laws by which the states of physical systems undergo change are not affected whether these changes of state be referred to one or the other of two systems of coordinates in uniform translatory motion. Okay, so let's paraphrase that to read this. Given any two inertial observers in uniform relative motion, both are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. Okay. So let me just read the whole thing. So given any two inertial observers in uniform relative motion, both are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. Okay, so the word inertial means that the observers are not experiencing any acceleration. Okay, so they're floating through empty space and they have their jetpacks or their rocket engines or whatever turned off. So they're not accelerating in any way. So this is not accelerating or rotating relative to the distant stars. That's a very deep statement there, but we won't actually fall into that black hole. Okay, so not accelerating or rotating. And they are in uniform relative motion. So what Einstein has in mind here is just two observers floating out in the middle of empty space, just drifting there and in some state of motion. And when one looks at the other, they say, you're going, say, that way with a speed v. This one looks at that one and says, no, you're going that way with a speed v, minus v. Okay? So they're drifting apart or toward each other, whatever, in some uniform relative motion. Both are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. And at rest here is put in quotation marks, meaning the same sort of thing as at rest over here. Okay, so we're going to tie these two together with that word, with that phrase, at rest. Okay, so let me give you an example of this. So suppose that you are in a train car, and this train car has all the shades down, and the train car is at rest on the tracks, and you're inside. So you're just basically inside a room, okay? And there's a pool table there, game of billiards. How many of you have played pool, billiards? Okay, so basically all of you, okay? So what you're doing is you got the stick, and you're shooting the cue ball around, and so on, and you're observing the way these balls behave. Okay, so you observe certain things. You observe stuff like this. So here is one of the banks of the table here. You observe that when you shoot a ball like this toward the bank, if it, say, hits the bank at 45 degrees, it's going to bounce off like this. What's the angle there? 45. Okay. What if you put a spin on it? Suppose you spin it this way and you hit the bank. Is this angle being less than or greater than 45? Less. Good. Okay, so that. And suppose that you have a ball like this and you hit some other ball like this and then bang like this. So one goes that way and one goes that way. What can you tell me about this physical phenomenon? Momentum is conserved, right? So you add up the initial momentum, and you find that that's equal to the sum of the momenta of the final momenta of the two balls, et cetera, right? So you observe the behavior of these balls reflecting off the sides, equal angles, and all that kind of stuff. And if one ball is spinning one way and you hit a ball at rest, it will transfer some of its spin and everything. So you learn all about the behavior of these balls. Okay? And then after a hard day of playing pool, you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning, and you're at it again. You're playing pool, and you're shooting the balls around, stuff like that. But unbeknownst to you, in the middle of the night, the train, while you were sleeping, the train has taken off. Okay, and now it's whipping down the track at, like, you know, 100 kilometers per hour or something. And we imagine that the track is very smooth and perfectly straight. Okay, and there's basically no vibration, so it's a maglev train or something, you know, that's super smooth. Okay, so you can't feel any vibration, you can't hear the engines going or whatever. The shades are drawn, so you can't see trees whipping by you and so on. And so you just wake up in the morning and whatever, feels the same as before. You play the game of billiards, you know, you shoot a ball like this and you say, oh yes, that angle equals that angle. And when I shoot one ball into the other, I observe, yes, conservation of momentum and all that kind of stuff. And so you observe that the game of billiards plays out exactly the same as it did the previous day. Okay? So the point here is that the velocity of the train, on day one, it was at rest with respect to the tracks. You know, on day two, it's moving with respect to the tracks. The velocity of that train with respect to the tracks has no effect on the way that these balls behave. Okay? In other words, there's no way, by making observations about how the balls behave, that you could get any information about how fast you're going. Okay? That's a very important point. That's basically what this principle of relativity is saying. So I could say it this way. So no way to determine velocity So I'll just say it again slightly differently. What it's saying is that the unaccelerated motion of a system of a room has no effect whatsoever on the way things behave, the way things happen in that room. And that's what it means. Okay, so let's talk about whether this principle is, or this, yeah, this principle P1 here is believable or not. Okay, well, first of all, it's obvious. Certainly in 1905, it would have been completely obvious to anyone if you apply this principle to mechanical phenomena. Okay, and it had been obvious for mechanical phenomena like billiard balls, like soccer balls, like cars, like you know, whatever. It was totally obvious for mechanical phenomena, even all the way back to Galileo. So even Galileo knew this. Newton certainly knew this very well, and everyone knows this. Okay, but it's not so obvious for electromagnetic phenomena. So E slash M, electromagnetic phenomena. Okay, so why is it not obvious for electromagnetic phenomena? Well, at the time, in 1905, so as I said, a lot of physicists had this picture of light as a wave moving in ether, like sound moving in air. So, for example, suppose we go with that. Suppose we imagine that light is a wave in ether. And we consider the following simple experiment. Okay, and the same thing would apply for sound in air. Same kind of an experiment. So the blackboard here represents either the ether or the air, depending on whether we're dealing with light or sound. Okay, and so that's sort of this backdrop. So we're going to have things floating around in this ether or this still air. Okay, and the first thing we're going to have floating around is a reference frame like this, which is at rest. So a room which is at rest with respect to that ether or air. And we have a source of light. Let's just stick to light here. Okay, we have a flashlight over here. And what we're going to do is click on this flashlight, and we're going to do a simple experiment. Okay, so we got Alice inside there, and what does she have? She has a ruler, and she has a clock. And she's going to measure the speed of light. Okay, so she clicks on this flashlight. You know, if light is a wave in ether, what that does is it sets up a disturbance of the ether here, and that ether vibrates, and the disturbance moves like dominoes with a speed c relative to the ether. Alice is at rest with respect to the ether. What speed does she measure? C. Okay, so she says, oh yes, C. Okay, now we consider another situation. Okay, so unbeknownst to Alice, in the middle of the night, her little room is accelerated and picks up, is now moving at some velocity, drifting with some velocity v relative to the ether. Okay, so she gets up in the morning and she conducts the same experiment, very complicated experiment. She conducts the same experiment again. Okay, she's got her ruler here and she's got her clock and so on. She does exactly the same experiment. What speed is she going to measure now? Okay, so how many say C? We're assuming wave in ether. Light is a wave in ether. Okay, so just like sound in air. Okay, so don't assume anything about relativity, anything that you know about special relativity. Just go back to the 1800s. Think about light as a wave in ether. And you are moving with respect to that ether. You are drifting this way, and the sound is coming, or the sorry, the light is coming at you this way. What speed are you going to measure? So how many say C? How many say C plus V? Okay, so she's going to measure C plus V. Okay, and let me just reemphasize this. What's going on here? If we imagine that light is a wave in ether, then what is this flashlight doing? What it's doing is it's grabbing a hold of that ether, that mechanical medium, and it's jiggling it around. Every time you set up some kind of a disturbance in that ether, that disturbance moves relative to the still ether. It radiates outwards in all directions relative to the still ether. So as this flashlight, even though this flashlight is in motion over here with respect to the ether, okay, the waves move at a speed c relative to the still ether. Okay. So here you have waves coming at you or moving with respect to the still ether with a speed c, but you're drifting in that ether towards those waves. Okay? So you're going to measure c plus v. Okay? So on day one, Alice finds she does a simple experiment involving an electromagnetic phenomenon, namely light. Okay? And she finds that, oh yes, the speed of this strange stuff called light is c. Okay, and then she wakes up the next morning, repeats the experiment, and finds a different result. Finds it's now C plus V. And says, whoa, something has changed. And so she can then determine something about the motion of her room based upon observations of a physical phenomenon confined to the inside of that room. Okay? So even though the room is sealed, okay, all the windows are drawn, all the blinds are drawn, she can't see outside, she can't see if she's moving from the day before or not or whatever, she can just conduct a simple experiment that takes place entirely within her little box and determine something about the motion of her box. Okay? So that's completely counter to this relativity principle. Okay? So it was not at all obvious at that time for electromagnetic phenomena. Okay? And that was the problem. Okay, so but what Einstein wanted to do is say, this is such a simple and beautiful principle that we would like to extend that from mechanical phenomena also to electromagnetic phenomena. So Einstein wanted both. In fact, all physical phenomena. He wanted it to be true that anyone in any inertial motion, non-accelerated motion, can consider themselves to be at rest, exactly as if they're at rest with respect to this ether. Okay, so the results of any experiment don't depend upon your motion. Okay, so everything that happens inside, any physical phenomenon inside a closed box, happens the same way regardless of the motion of that box. You can't determine the motion by doing experiments inside the box, whether those experiments be mechanical or electromagnetic. Okay, the results of all experiments are the same as if you were at rest, in quotation marks. Okay, so the point here is if light is a wave in ether, there's a problem with this principle. It's not obvious that it applies. But what if light is not a wave in ether? Yeah. Yeah.
What if we are actually the one behind
the invisible one.
So what if we are actually talking about air instead of ether?
Yeah.
So is it possible to say that the air is actually moving with the same velocity we inside the box?
Oh, yeah, so that's a good question. So if we think about this as air and we are moving with respect to air, then what we are imagining is that that the air can pass through. Okay, so that when this person is moving with respect to the air, the box is not completely sealed. Okay, otherwise the air would be at rest with respect to this person. Right? So we imagine that the person is actually standing on a platform, an open platform like this, and drifting with a velocity v relative to the still air. Okay, and then we would see c plus v.
But how do we know that actually ether would not like move together with the box?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So how would we know that the ether wouldn't just drift along? So here's a massive object like this, and maybe that massive object would grab onto that ether and drag it with it. Okay, so people thought a lot about that sort of thing, and they concluded, well, that can't be happening because, suppose that the ether were some physical substance. Okay, and if that were happening, then here's the sun. And here are planets going around the sun like this, then those planets would also be dragging ether along with them. And if the ether is any kind of a physical substance, that's going to produce a drag. And then the planets would actually slow down and spiral in. And so they made careful measurements of the planets, and they didn't detect any of this spiraling in. Okay? And lots of experiments were done to try to detect, you know, drag and fluids moving and so on and so forth. And it was a very complicated set of ideas floating around. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't it mean that any movement would create some form of light or electromagnetic radiation, since it would set up a
certain. Yeah, that's right. That's right too. So if it were true that material like matter moving through that ether dragged the ether, then my hand would drag the ether as well, and I could just go like this. And I would be setting up vibrations of that ether, and I would be radiating light of low frequency, right? So, okay, right. So there are problems with this whole ether idea, with this whole mechanical model of light. Okay, so the question then is, okay, so it's clear that if you have wave and ether in mind, it's clear that there's a problem with principle P1 here. Okay, it's not consistent. But what if light is not a wave and ether? Okay. What if light is not a mechanical vibration of some physical medium? What if light is itself some kind of physical medium in its own right? Okay. So at the same time, in the same year, Einstein wrote a number of very important and influential papers. And one paper that came just before the special relativity paper was his paper that's called the photoelectric effect paper. How many of you are aware of this paper? Okay. So what was the goal of this paper? The goal, right at the beginning of the paper, Einstein states very clearly the goal. The goal is to bring electromagnetic phenomena on the same footing with mechanical phenomena. Okay, so for example, you think about say a baseball. A baseball. I throw a baseball like this. That baseball is moving through space. If I go out into empty space, I can throw a baseball and it can move through a vacuum. Okay, so I can have a chunk of matter moving through a vacuum. And that chunk of matter has various properties. It has energy, it has momentum. If it's spinning, it has angular momentum, all that stuff. So I can have matter moving through a vacuum and having energy, momentum, angular momentum, and all that stuff. What if light is not a vibration of some existing material filling everything? What if light itself